Have you heard of the seventh generation principle? Or did you think seventh generation just referred to a laundry detergent? It's much more than that. In this episode, find out how embracing the seventh generation teachings of Native Americans can save our planet. Hello. Welcome to the Molly Larkin Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you live your best life. I'm Molly Larkin. I've been a student of personal growth since the age of 7. What makes us inspired? How can we become more connected to the natural world around us? Let's find out. Whenever I mention the seventh generation principle to most people, they think I'm talking about the ecologically friendly laundry detergent company. I'm always surprised more people don't know the origin of the term, so I felt it deserved an episode, particularly at this time in our history when our very future is at stake. Because if we embrace it, the seventh generation principle may very well save us. The seventh generation principle taught by Native Americans says that in every decision, be it personal, governmental, or corporate, we must consider how it will affect our descendants 7 generations into the future. This principle is clearly not embraced by most governments and corporations in the world today. Most seem to function only for how much money they can make today and the heck with the future. The seventh generation principle was so important to Native American cultures that it was codified in the Iroquois Great Law of Peace, which was one of the models for the United States Constitution. I've written a blog post on that, which I'll link to in the show notes. The earliest record of the seventh generation principle dates back to the Great Law of Peace of the Iroquois Confederacy created in the 12th century. When our founding fathers looked for examples of effective government and human liberty upon which to model a constitution to unite the 13 colonies, they found it in the government of the Iroquois Nation, which at that point had stood for hundreds of years. Ironically, in drafting our constitution, our founders left out 2 of the essential principles of the Great Law of Peace, the seventh generation principle and the role of women in government. That's why today the Iroquois say the United States copied the Great Law of Peace, but didn't really understand it. To my knowledge, all Native American and Indigenous tribes throughout the world embrace this teaching of making decisions that will positively impact those coming after them. They always honor the ancestors who came before them and think about those coming after, as exemplified in this Native American proverb. We do not inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. Those of us descended from the European culture have generally not given it much thought, but it's woven into the fabric of the lives of Indigenous people worldwide. In 1992, I accompanied a Native American elder to Australia for a conference that included Native American, Maori, and Aborigine elders. Maoris are the indigenous Polynesian people of New Zealand, but the group traveling with us at that time was living in Australia. Known for their warrior culture, Maoris are also known for their traditional haka war dance. If you've ever watched New Zealand's rugby team, the All Blacks, you've likely seen them perform the haka before the game. It's meant to intimidate their opponents and raise their own energy, and it's quite a sight to behold and feel. You can find quite a few videos of it on YouTube. I get goosebumps every time I watch it. But Maoris are also very friendly and fun-loving and loved to sit around camp singing and inviting people over for coffee and laughter. Because they were living in Australia, the Maori family invited our group to come and stay at their home in Adelaide for a few days in between teaching events. It was here that I got a powerful life lesson. When we arrived at their home in the Adelaide suburbs, we were asked to wait outside until it was time to be led in by their daughters. Not long after our arrival, the eldest daughter appeared on the front porch and chanted to us 3 times in a loud, moving voice. Harimara! 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 And the daughter standing on the sidewalk with our group responded by calling out, Karangamai! 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 Then we were led inside for a welcoming ceremony. Later that day, I asked about the meaning of the chanting in the front of the house before we came in. I was told that the eldest daughter was calling out an invitation to our ancestors, who always walk before us. And the younger daughter replied on the ancestors' behalf, "We are coming, and we're bringing them with us." That teaching profoundly moved me, that our ancestors are always paving the way for us and surrounding and protecting us. It's a common teaching of Indigenous peoples, one that has, unfortunately, been lost in Western culture. What kind of ancestors will we be? Long before environmentalists got us thinking about carbon footprints and sustainability, Indigenous peoples lived in balance with the world around them and understood that all beings on Earth are related and we have to take care of one another. It's even defined in their language. The Lakota have a saying, "Mitakweasan," which means we are all related to and respect everything in life. The Algonquin word for it is Nogomach, and the Anishinaabe word for it is Gakina Awia. And the Maya phrase In Lakesh Alakin is similar in meaning. It means, I am you, and you are me. And then there's this teaching from Indian sage Ramana Maharshi, asked by a student, "Master, how are we to treat others?" The master replied, "There are no others." To live by the seventh generation principle, one would ask prior to any undertaking, how will this affect the land, water, air, animals, birds, plants, and the future for our children seven generations ahead? But most of our governments and corporations have not done that. I'm attaching to the blog post version of this episode a bibliography of 34 articles I read in researching this episode. Just so you know, I'm not making this stuff up. So here's where we stand today. The bad news. Carbon levels in the Earth's atmosphere just reached their highest level ever in human history, 415 parts per million, a level that has not been seen in over 3 million years. CO2, which is emitted when we burn fossil fuels like coal, oil, and natural gas, is a greenhouse gas which traps heat in the Earth's atmosphere, contributing to the global temperature increases which drive climate change. Temperatures rise, ice caps melt, sea levels rise, and habitat and landmass is lost. And we experience erratic, violent weather patterns, as we've been experiencing. Today's headline said, "Extreme weather is shattering records around the world." When he learned this statistic, meteorologist Eric Holthaus tweeted, "Not just in recorded history, not just since the invention of agriculture 10,000 years ago, since before modern humans existed millions of years ago, we haven't seen a planet like this." So how did this happen? To a great extent, corruption and greed at the highest level is responsible. The United States government has appointed climate change deniers to head the Environmental Protection Agency, known as the EPA, and they've weakened protections for clean air and water and tried to cut funding efforts to advance renewable energy. And the United States is the worst polluter in the world. Nearly every country in the world, except the United States, took a historic step to curb plastic waste recently when more than 180 nations agreed to add plastic to the Basel Convention, a treaty that regulates the movement of hazardous materials between countries. Dow Chemical donated $1 million to Trump and asked his administration to ignore pesticide studies showing that they are harmful to almost 1,800 critically threatened or endangered species. These pesticides can also hinder the development of children's brains, but our current EPA is reversing Obama-era efforts to bar the use of the chemicals on food. Recently, for instance, the research group Influence Map reported that the world's five biggest publicly listed oil and gas companies, led by BP and Shell, are spending nearly $200 million a year on lobbying to delay efforts to prevent climate breakdown. According to Greenpeace UK, BP has successfully pressed the Trump administration to overturn laws passed by the Obama administration preventing companies from releasing methane, a powerful greenhouse gas, into the atmosphere. There's only one reason for that. The oil companies want to make more money, and the result will be to push us faster towards a hothouse Earth. Our government and oil companies knew in the 1980s that humans were causing global warming, yet did virtually nothing. And just because something is legal doesn't mean it's safe. Federal government standards for pesticides in food are often outdated and not based on the best and most current science. The EPA's standards for pesticides and other chemicals are also heavily influenced by lobbying from industry. It's estimated that many breakfast cereals and snack bars made with oats contain the weed killer glyphosate, which has been found to be carcinogenic. Our children eat breakfast cereal. What are we doing to them? You may have heard of 16-year-old climate activist Greta Thunberg of Sweden, who recently spoke before the United Nations saying, "You did not act in time. I want you to panic. I want you to act as if the house was on fire," end quote. In fact, Bill Nye, the science guy, says, "The earth is on frigging fire." Only he didn't say frigging, but this is a family show. Greta went on, "We probably don't even have a future anymore. That future was sold so that a small number of people could make unimaginable amounts of money. The fact that we are speaking of lowering instead of stopping emissions is perhaps the greatest force behind the continuing business as usual. The extinction rate is up to 10,000 times faster than what is considered normal, with up to 200 species becoming extinct every single day. Erosion of fertile topsoil, deforestation of our great forests, toxic air pollution, loss of insects and wildlife, the acidification of our oceans. These are all disastrous trends being accelerated by a way of life that we, here in our financially fortunate part of the world, see as our right to simply carry on. The climate crisis has already been solved. We already have all the facts and solutions. All we have to do is wake up and change," end quote. And she's right. We know what to do. Most of us just won't do it. Current efforts to protect nature are not ambitious enough to match the scale of the threat our planet is facing. The Green New Deal proposed in the United States Congress is ambitious, but people are pushing back because they don't want to change their lifestyle. Well, if we don't act now, lifestyle change will be forced upon us, and it won't be pretty. We're also killing off the animal world. For both people and wildlife to thrive, now and in the future, we need a healthy planet with a rich variety of plants and animals and vibrant ecosystems. 3 weeks ago, the United Nations released a bombshell report sounding the alarm that an unprecedented 1 million species could vanish from the planet, and humans are to blame. Here's what's happening. All over the world, we're cutting down forests, using too much water from rivers, polluting rivers and lakes, choking our oceans with plastic, and pushing many animals to extinction. Animals near extinction include giraffes, tigers, gorillas, chimpanzees, Asian elephants, sea otters, orangutans, koalas, to name just a few. Scientists are now saying that the Earth is experiencing its sixth mass wave of extinction, with billions of local animal populations endangered around the world. Mass extinction is considered a bigger problem than terrorism or nuclear events. A report from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences just released a report saying humanity has killed 83% of all wild mammals and half of all plants. Of the birds left in the world, 70% are poultry chickens. Of the mammals left, 60% are livestock, 36% are pigs, and only 4% are wild. Since 1950, marine bird populations are down 30%. Big ocean fish are down 90%. Freshwater fish are down 50%. Marine animals are down 28%. Songbirds are down 50%. And 90% of seabirds have plastic in their stomachs. And along with plastics, pesticides are integrally involved in all of this loss. 7 million human deaths a year are linked to air pollution, and 92% of us are breathing it daily. Scientific American reported that the ocean is running out of breath. Oxygen levels in the oceans are rapidly declining and affecting marine ecosystems. It's no surprise to scientists that warming oceans are losing oxygen, but the scale of it calls for urgent attention. In the United States, migratory birds have lost their protection by our government weakening the laws. Swallows and other birds have not returned to Europe this year. Trapped in huge, cheap Chinese nets in Egypt, where they're slaughtered and sold for food. Up to 140 million birds are being slaughtered in Egypt this year. Now, birds have always been captured and hunted for food, but these cheap Chinese nets allow it for it to go from a sustainable level to an almost industrial scale. We're consuming the world's resources faster than nature can replenish them. We create more waste than the planet can absorb. 70% of the Earth's surface has become transformed for human goods and services. An American family with two children effectively has 15 to 20 children compared to people in Bolivia or Ethiopia because of our consumption. We would need 5 planet Earths to give us enough energy to continue the way we are. Our cultural wisdom is, buy this, it will make you happy. It's almost un-American not to participate in buying more things. We have a drive for perpetual economic growth on a finite planet. That's not sustainable. If current trends continue, within decades, half or more of all plant and animal species will disappear forever. Within 30 to 40 years, it will be irreversible, because extinction is forever. We are the first generation to know we are destroying the world's resources. We may be the last that can do anything about it. Naturalist and educator David Attenborough said, "Science is now clear that urgent action is needed. What happens now and in these next few years will profoundly affect the next few thousand years." Newsweek recently said, "The Earth could take 10 million years for the diversity of species on our planet to recover from the mass extinction now caused by humans. We have 12 years left to cut emissions in half, or hundreds of millions of people will face food and water shortages, poverty, and death." So why have we let it go this far? Personally, I think that when we hear 200 species going extinct every day, we're shocked and sad. Then an hour later, we've moved on and go into denial. It's not that we don't care. I believe it's that we feel helpless and don't know what to do. But there's much we can do, which I'll get into in a few moments. We tell lies to ourselves, and we listen to lies from our leaders and believe them. Our leaders in the United States are telling us there's no problem. Think about that. There's something wrong with them. Corporations continue to mine the earth for more wealth in spite of all the evidence that we're killing the earth. In fact, Native Americans viewed excessive wealth as a mental illness. On the other hand, the British Parliament just declared, quote, "We're talking about the irreversible destruction of the environment in our lifetime," end quote. And the British newspaper The Guardian will no longer use the term climate change. Instead, they will use climate crisis. One reason all this is going on is that we keep getting pushed further from nature and don't love and appreciate it. And yet nature is so healing that in Japan, time in nature is prescribed by doctors to reduce stress and other illness. It's called forest bathing. Spending time in nature is healing. We don't even really live in the place that we live. We live in an artificial construct on top of it, if we're living in houses and apartment buildings. The city is a place of sensory deprivation. All sounds are artificial. We have whole generations that lack access to a relationship with nature. Many of us have nature deficit disorder. By the time a child is 7, they can identify 200 corporate logos, but cannot identify the trees growing in their front yard. So why care for what you don't have a relationship with? This is the worst crisis the world has ever faced. But that said, I've always felt there is more right in the world than wrong, and there is some good news in that some governments and corporations are facing this problem head on. There is actually codified law in Hawaii and California called the Precautionary Principle, which is a legal version of the Seventh Generation Principle. The law says that as trustees of the land, we must protect the earth from harm and conserve it for future generations. The country of Bolivia has passed the Law of Mother Earth, which gives rights to our planet as a living system. Costa Rica is set to become the world's first plastic-free and carbon-free country by 2021. They've been working towards that for a while. The city of Chicago just committed to 100% renewable energy by 2040. New York City has initiated massive changes that will make it carbon neutral by 2050. California has mandated that new homes be outfitted with solar panels starting in 2020. Many cities are banning the use of single-use plastic bags, which is a great start. The outdoor company Patagonia is donating its $10 million tax break to environmental groups. Let's hope that other companies follow suit. The Ocean Cleanup is a company based in the Netherlands that has invented technology to remove plastic from the oceans. They're on track to clean up half of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch within 5 years. It was founded by an 18-year-old. It really seems that the youth are leading the charge to save our planet, because we've let them down. On an individual level, here are some actions we can take to reverse climate change. First, support the Green New Deal proposed in the United States Congress. It's not extreme, it's essential. Vote for candidates both locally and nationally who are committed to protecting the earth. Tell your political representatives how you feel about issues. Badger them to commit to renewable energy. Sign petitions calling for businesses to reduce plastic. It works. Trader Joe's recently announced plans to phase out plastic waste after a Greenpeace petition circulated around the internet. Petitions do work. Recycle passionately, as if your life depends on it, because it does, particularly the lives of the sea animals who are eating and getting caught in plastic. On a more spiritual level, talk to the earth, the plants, the trees. Thank them. Thank your food. Thank the water every time you use it. And above all, be a light in the world through your thoughts, words, and actions. For more such tips on individual actions, I've attached a PDF on what you can do to the blog post version of this episode. In the words of renowned animal healer Margaret Coates, each day we need to do something positive. Check every area of our life. Collect litter. Change shopping and eating habits. Be a voice for the environment. Show that we care. We then join an expanding human consciousness to make a difference. And in the words of spiritual leader Thich Nhat Hanh, realize that you are the earth, and your consciousness is the earth. And always ask, will the decisions we make today be beneficial for our descendants? Will they thank us? Will we be proud of the efforts we've made to protect Mother Earth? Native American activist Winona LaDuke said, "Let us be the ancestors our descendants will thank." Remember that everything we do matters. If we live our lives from that idea, we will be following the Seventh Generation Principle. And remember that There are no others. We are all related, and we're all in this together. For more information on Native American teachings, look for the book I co-authored with Native American Elder Bearhart, The Wind is My Mother, The Life and Teachings of a Native American Shaman. You'll find it on my website, mollylarkin.com/products, and on Amazon.